Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Nice to have you on this Wednesday. Nice to have you because it always is, but because I've got a lot to cover. I've got a really good Wednesday show for you. Wednesday, one of the best days of the week for the program because it always sets up really nicely. I've got some good interviews. I've got an ATP. I have a What's Your Beef segment. Get yourself ready for that. The beef segment's coming up in hour number two. If you have a beef, you want to get it to me, get ready for that. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Welcome to the show. All right, the show sets up like this. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. If you know what you want to talk about, you can hit me right now, but I will caution. If it's a beef, save it for next hour. Also, we're going to go back-to-back interviews in the first hour. That'll happen. It does happen on occasion. But again, for the right telephone call, I'll bust my form out wide open. For the right telephone call, 1-800-636-8686. If you want to send me a beef via Twitter, hit me up. Are you using Twitter Fleets? Have you done that yet? I saw Hawk took to Fleets to try to pimp his gear. What a sellout, man. I can't believe you, Hawk. Hawk's like, that's why I did it there, so nobody would see it. Oh, okay. Using Twitter to sell merch. Come on, Hawk. He's already got his face buried in his hands. I see you working, dude. You got to do it. It's all right, man. You got to put food on your table. Don't tell me you hate doing it. You did it, and you'll keep doing it. So hit me up on Twitter. If you've got a beef about anything, we read Twitter-related beefs. The beef segment's coming up at 10:20 Pacific time. If you want to send me an email, you may do that as well. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. So the interview is set up like this. Coming up next segment, Notre Dame quarterback Ian Book. That's a jungle debut. He has not been on before. So that's coming up in less than 20 minutes. Later on this hour, Matt Norlander. He has been on before. NBA draft is coming up. And so we'll break that down with him. Coming up in hour number two, Dennis Dodd, a national college football writer for CBS Sports. They plow on with the college season as well. So we've got that. Episode 152. That's a big fat number. I'm proud of it. Episode 152 of the Jim Rome Podcast. Later on today, Justin Thomas joins us. So I'm looking forward to it. There you go. That's your setup. Let me start you off with a topic and an angle and a joke. I got jokes. I got lots of jokes. Except this seemed like a joke when it first came out. It seemed like even more of a joke. It seemed like an internet hoax or some moron pretending to be an NBA insider with a fake internet account, dropping some bomb, looking to see how many people that he could hook with that bomb. I'm talking about the James Harden to Brooklyn Nets angle. I'm talking about James Harden playing with Kevin Durant. I'm talking about James Harden playing with Kyrie Irving. I'm talking about James Harden playing with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. So when that came up, it sounded like the dumbest thing ever. It sounded like your typical internet bullcrap clickbait manufactured by some D-bag looking to get likes on their feed. And when they aren't posting made-up trade reports, they're putting up old highlights with the captions like, Tom Chambers was a problem. And then dopes get into arguments in the comments section about whether or not Tom Chambers would succeed in the modern NBA. And by the way, Chambers was a problem. And he absolutely would have a place in today's game. But I digress. So, when James Harden to the Nets first surfaced, I ignored it because I knew it was just some idiot jerking everybody's chain. Don't get me wrong. I would love for it to be a real thing. Because what would be better? Nothing. But as always, if something seems too good to be true, it's because it generally is. Except this isn't. This actually is a real thing. And while anything but a lock, this could actually happen. Now, I don't want to make this about me because that's never been my deal. You know that about me. The one thing you know about me is that I would never make it about me. But why don't we go ahead and make this about me? I don't ask for very much. In fact, I don't ask for anything. The only thing I've ever asked for is that you have a take and you not suck. And that you do not bring personal appearance smack to the program. Or bum smack. Or fat smack. Other than that, I never ask anybody for anything. I'm good. I really don't want anything. Except for James Harden to run alongside KD and Kyrie. I admit it. I want that. I want that. In fact, I want that more than I think I've ever wanted anything in my life. Anything in the world. Now you might say, hey now, hold up, Rome. Hold up. Didn't you want and weren't you obsessed with seeing an NFL team run the table backwards? I mean, sure, I guess, sort of, maybe, but not like I want this. I've never wanted anything in or out of sports as much as I want James Harden running with KD and Kyrie, because that would be amazing. And the amazing things, or it would be amazing in an only 2020, only in 2020 sort of way, that kind of amazing. It'd be unbelievable. So there was the report from ESPN that Harden turned down a 2-year extension that would have kept him in Houston until 2025. It would have paid him $103 million for 2 years. That would have made him the first $50 million a year player in the NBA. So on the one hand, if you're turning down $103 million right now, it seems like you really want out. On the other hand, Harden has to know that that's not a one-time offer only. The money's still going to be there if he decides that he wants to stay. And again, it's not just Harden who wants out, reportedly. Russell Westbrook also wants out, which yet again raises the question, the hell happened to the Rockets? I mean, it was not that long ago that the only thing that stood between the Rockets and an NBA championship was Chris Paul's hamstring, because they had a transcendent Warriors team on the ropes as recently as 2018. That's not that long ago. And now they're ripping apart. And now they're in a really tough spot with not one, but two Hall of Famers who want out. Their head coach is already gone. Their GM is already gone. And by the way, if you're Harden and you recognize that you're 31 and you're on a team that is not built to compete for an NBA title, why wouldn't you be looking around? Why wouldn't you want to see what's out there? And that's before we get into any personal issues that might exist in that organization. According to ESPN, the Rockets know they're in an awkward spot, but the Rockets are, quote, willing to get uncomfortable, unquote, for a while. So in other words, they will not be pressured into dealing Westbrook or Harden. Just because Harden and Westbrook both want out does not mean they have to accommodate that request. They're under contract. They don't have to do jack. That's cool. I get that. Business is business. But how about this? How about this? How about you just trade James Harden to the Nets? How about you get comfortable with that? If you really want to be uncomfortable, if you're really locked into being uncomfortable, that's fine too. Let me give you something that'll make you uncomfortable. You sending Harden to the Nets, if you do that, you will not in any way get fair value for this guy once you make that deal. That is an unwinnable trade for the Rockets. No way they make that deal and not get worked. If Drew Holiday to the Bucks was worth two players and three first-round picks and two pick swaps, what the hell does James Harden get you? Five players and a billion first-round picks? You get completely worked. However, it's not about you. It's not about Harden. It's about me. It's about the rest of us. You make that trade, and you lose that trade, and you do so knowing it's an enormous win for the rest of us. And James Harden, playing with Kevin Durant, makes sense, right? They're friends. They play together in OKC. And according to reports, Harden thinks very highly of Durant. That's a fact. Now, let me give you one more fact. Kyrie Irving thinks very highly of Kyrie Irving. And that's why this is awesome and incredible and legendary. Hell, this might be the best thing ever. A 4-time scoring champ and a 3-time scoring champ teaming up would be legendary. But the best part is, what would the guy with zero scoring titles think? He'd think he's the alpha. He'd think that he's option number one. He'd think that he's the only reason the other two even want to be together so they can play with him. That the reason things didn't work out with LeBron and Kyrie is because Kyrie was so much better than Braun, and Braun knew it, and Braun couldn't live with it. You know Kyrie's thinking all these things. Like, the only cliche there is in basketball that's better than this, well, there isn't one. This is it. That there's only one ball. That has never been more true than it would be on a team with Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving. There's only one ball. If Kyrie did not like being Robin to LeBron's Batman, how is he going to like being Alfred the Butler to KD and Harden? Let me answer that for you. Horribly. If Durant did not like Draymond Green jawing with him in Golden State, how is he going to like it when Irving starts that in Brooklyn? Like, don't get me wrong. The basketball experience on the floor would be amazing at times. But when it goes wrong, and it always does with Kyrie, it would be even more incredible. And don't tell me that KD and Kyrie are professionals and they would just shut out the noise. Hell no. That's not how they're wired. Not only does KD not shut out the noise, he welcomes it. My man has got rabbit ears. As Ethan Strauss pointed out in the past, some stars in the league get angry with a reporter over a headline, but never actually read the article. Quote, not KD. He reads everything. He takes issue with specific sentences and phrases. A few in particular had inspired his ire, or so I heard. End quote. Like, this is a guy who spent a good chunk of his time in Golden State believing that the local media had it in for him because they loved Steph Curry more than they loved him. This is the same guy who was allegedly pissed that Maurice Spates was more popular and accepted by Warrior fans than he was. The guy who was allegedly bothered that Spates had the nickname Mo Buckets. Like, that's the kind of crap that KD lets infect his dome and get under his skin. So if he's getting worked up about Mo Buckets as a nickname, how the hell is it going to go when Kyrie does what Kyrie does and starts complaining to the media, or starts trying to be the general manager of the team, or gets his own nickname, or the fans like some random dude at the end of the bench more than they like KD? KD was like the prickliest guy in the Western Conference, and then he joined up with Kyrie, the prickliest guy in the Eastern Conference. And then you throw in the guy who does the mysterious fake nosebleed celebration after he dunks. Hell yes, I want that. I want all of that. And about 20 games in, when there's a two-game losing streak, and Kyrie has just gone 6-for-21 from the field, the post-game media sessions are going to be must-see TV. And the sub-tweeting will be even better. So give me the guy who was bent about Mo Buckets. Give me the guy who thinks that the earth is flat. Or that he was really clever when he said that the earth is flat. And give me the guy who once said this about Giannis.
But I wish I could just run and with 7 feet and run and just dunk. Like, that takes no skill at all. I got to actually learn how to play basketball and how to have skill, you know? I take that any day.
James Harden saying that Giannis is just 7 feet tall and dunks will never not be funny to me. And saying that, quote, it takes no skill at all, and quote, I got to actually learn how to play basketball to have skill, is the best. Harden might be an all-time great NBA scorer of the ball, but that was an all-time horrible speaker of the take. Like, an all-time horrible NBA take, and it cracks me up every single time I hear it. And now we have the chance. I just spent nearly 15 minutes laying this out. A dream. A chance of getting that guy on the same squad as KD and Kyrie. I don't just want this big three in Brooklyn. I need it. We all need it. And more than needing it, we deserve it. Give it to us, Houston. You owe it to us. You want to be uncomfortable? Great. Make that trade. Get worked in that trade. Give the people what they want. An all-time train wreck. Side note, don't test trains. They can't stop. Hey, look, I would say that I'm here for it, but that'd be the biggest understatement ever. That does not begin to do it justice. does not begin to do justice to how badly I need that. Get it done. Get it done right now. Send this guy to Brooklyn. Give him what he wants, but even more than that, give us what we want. 1-800-636-8686. I've got an update on Russ. Russ and the missus. Russ and Ciara are at it again. I've got that for you. Mike Tomlin. Oh my goodness. I can't believe it. He did it. Finally. Cue up Ritt.
Finally.
Straight fire from Mike Tomlin. Years after that initial tweet. I've got that story for you too. And a lot more. Let me get out. If you've got a beef, lock it in. Set it up. I'll take it next hour. Ian Book joins me next segment. Dell Technologies just announced their Black Friday sale. They are releasing new doorbusters every weekday, plus up to 50% off cutting-edge tech for your business. There is no better time to upgrade your small business with the latest laptops and desktops with Intel Core processors, and there is free shipping on everything. Yes, everything. Give Dell Technologies advisors a call right now. They will identify the right tech solution for your business. Call 877-ASK-DELL. Or go to Dell.com/SB Black Friday. 877-ASK-DELL. 877-ASK-DELL.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Let's not waste time. Let's get it. As promised, we're joined right back. Welcome. I'm Jim Rome. We are joined right now by a quarterback in Notre Dame. He is a two-time captain. He is an O'Brien Award watchlister, a Maxwell Award watchlister, a Manning Award watchlister. 368 yards from scrimmage, four touchdowns in Saturday's win over BC. Nearly 2,200 yards and 17 touchdowns on the season. Notre Dame is unbeaten. They're 8-0. They are ranked number two in both polls, and they are at North Carolina, November 27th. Ian Book is my guest. Ian, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Ian, thank you so much for doing it. So you beat Boston College 45-31. Let me start right there. That's a game, Ian, I think that could have easily been a trap because you were coming off that huge double overtime win over top-ranked Clemson. You know Boston College is always going to be fired up to play you. How would you describe the mindset and attitude then that the team had going into that game?
Yeah, I mean, first off, you know, Coach Kelly just did a great job of, you know, setting the message straight at the beginning of the week of, you know, obviously coming off of a very physical game, very emotional game against the number one team in the country. But then he just said, hey, it's a rivalry game. You know, we're playing for a trophy. This is a rivalry game that's had a lot of tradition for a long time. And they're a good team, really good team. So he did a great job of setting the message straight, and the team did an unbelievable job of responding to that. We went out there and got it done. Now we got a few more to go.
Notre Dame quarterback Ian Book is my guest. You know, there's a play in particular that I want to bring up. With just under 6 minutes to go in the second quarter, you had a second and goal from the 13 where your primary targets were covered and it looked like you might get sacked, but you backpedaled out of trouble. You found Ben Skowronek on the opposite side of the field. Brian Kelly said, quote, I'd like to say that we drew it up like that, but that's all Ian Book. So what do you remember about that play and how you executed it?
Yeah, I just remember going through my read, and then I remember feeling a little bit of pressure right in front of me, and just I do remember backpedaling out of there. And the receivers just did an unbelievable job last week of just getting open when I was extending the play and working back towards me. And Ben did a great job of getting separation, and I saw that he had some space, you know, to the sideline and could get into the end zone. So he did a great job of giving me a chance, but yeah, it definitely wasn't drawn up like that, but we were happy to get in the end zone for sure.
We're talking to Ian Book. So because of plays like that, you're now 28-3 in your career as a starter. In fact, you're on pace to have the most wins in school history, but it feels like in the last few weeks, you found an even higher level. You yourself said, I'm just elevating at the right time. So how have you been able to elevate your game the way you have recently?
Yeah, just there's a few things. I mean, I just try to, you know, be the same person every single day. But I've been working with Coach Reese for a long time now, and you know, just getting in the film room and just studying, you know, every little, you know, bits and pieces and details to the defense, to our offense, and you know what works well against certain coverages, and just taking it to the next level, and as well as chemistry. You know, We only had one spring practice, you know, but we've done an unbelievable job of just getting work in with each other every single day and working on chemistry. And I just really trust, you know, our tight ends, running backs, offensive line, and every guy on the perimeter that stepped up this year.
I think it's interesting what you just said, that you try to be the same person every single day. Why is that so critical, and what are you trying to guard against in that regard?
It's just part of being a quarterback, and especially at Notre Dame. You know, just there's a lot that goes on. There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of privileges, but you just got to be level-headed, and that's part of the position. That's really just what it's, you know, it's quarterback's different than any other position, and that's what it takes, and that's kind of just what I tell myself every morning I get up. Just be the same person, and things will work out the way that we want them to.
See, I was going to ask you about that, because being quarterback is one thing. I mean, that's a challenging enough gig as it is, but being the quarterback in Notre Dame is something totally different. That's one of the most high-profile positions, not just in college sports, but in all of sports. Because of the pressure and the attention that comes along with it, it's not for everybody. You touched on it, but how would you describe what it's like to be the starting quarterback at Notre Dame and then everything that comes along with that gig?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. It's a dream come true for me. I've been wanting to play college football since I was in third grade, and just to land at Notre Dame is unbelievable. It's a dream come true. But, yeah, I mean, we got a target on your back when you're a quarterback. You got a target on your back that's a little bigger when you're the quarterback at Notre Dame, and that's just part of the position. But I just enjoy it. You gotta find a way to enjoy it. It's fun. It's a dream come true. But you do something well, everybody loves you, and it's amazing. If you do something bad, you're going to take all of the blame, and that's just part of it. And just had good people in my corner who've taught me to, you know, find a way to just listen to all that information and, you know, keep what's good and get rid of what's bad. So I've got a lot of good people in my corner.
Ian Book is joining us. I would imagine you've kind of experienced every one of those things. Like, as an example, Ian, you were not necessarily a household name in recruiting circles coming out of El Dorado Hills, California, but now you're on the verge of being the winningest quarterback in Notre Dame history. You're getting Heisman run. You're putting together a really special season. So maybe you're not wired for this per se, but is there any part of you that wants to say, okay, how do you all like me now?
Yes, there's definitely a part of that. I mean, you know, I was a three-star, under-recruited quarterback. You know, a lot of people skipped, and that just kind of gave me a little chip on my shoulder. Kind of made me the person I am today. Obviously, I feel like I can play with anybody, and it's a good mentality to have. But, yeah, I know that's just part of it, and I know how I was recruited, and I know that, you know, why some teams skipped me and stuff like that, and being a three-star. But I just let that motivate me, and got a great group of teammates that, you know, are helping me have a lot of success on Saturday.
You know, you gave me a really good answer, but I'm just going to ask you this. Are you looking to prove people right, or are you looking to prove people wrong?
I'd rather prove people right, for sure. I've definitely thought about that and heard that before. You know, I got, like I said earlier, I got good people in my corner, and all those people who have trusted and believed in me, you know, from the beginning, I'd rather prove them right than anybody else. There's a lot of noise outside that just really doesn't matter.
Talking Ian Book and doing it for a few more moments. I know you're getting ready for North Carolina, but if you go back to that Clemson game for 1 minute, you led that team on a 91-yard drive against the top-ranked team in the country, and then you finish it off in double OT. When you go on a drive like that and you win a game like that against the number one team in the country, that's something that is going to be remembered forever. What did it feel like to be at the center of a moment like that and to finally break on through as a group, as a unit?
Oh, it was amazing. It's definitely a night that, you know, we will all remember forever. We definitely made history that night. And I remember a specific time after the game, I was with some of my teammates. We kind of just took a step back and we're like, we really did it. You know, it's just a game you're never going to forget. And no matter what, no matter how long you play football after this or whatever, just it's a game that, you know, we worked really hard for. We had that game circled on our calendar for a long time, and we were able to get it done. But there's definitely more work to be had.
So you'll make it about the team. I know you will, but I mentioned the Heisman. Because of that game and the way you've played this year, your name is coming up as a Heisman candidate. What is your reaction when you hear that?
Oh, it's really cool. It's awesome. And, again, I just know that if we take care of, you know, business, you know, these next few weeks, and then hopefully in ACC championship and into the playoffs, you know, the rest of it will take care of itself. But, I mean, yeah, it's a true honor to be mentioned in any of those. It's definitely cool to see, and it's motivating for sure.
So, and finally, you mentioned Brian Kelly. Let me ask you about another member of the staff. Your offensive coordinator and QB coach, Tommy Rees, does know exactly what it's like to play quarterback at Notre Dame. How valuable, then, is it to have somebody like that working with you on a daily basis?
Yeah, it's truly the best. You know, I just feel like learning from somebody who's done it, you know, specifically Coach Reese has done literally everything that I've done. He's been in the same, you know, same pressures, same privileges that I've been at here at Notre Dame. It's just easier to learn from somebody like that. And it's been huge. He's been in my corner since he was my quarterback coach and now onto my offensive coordinator. He's just done such a good job. You know, he believes in me and trusts me, and I believe in him and trust him. And we're starting to get on the same page on a lot of things, and it's truly just amazing. I love him as a person and as a coach, and he's somebody that, you know, I can go to. It doesn't even have to just be about football. It can be about life, and he's in my corner, and I can't thank him enough.
So one quick follow. It's another one of those football lines, one of those lifelines. So pressure. Is pressure a burden or is pressure a privilege?
Pressure is a privilege. We've talked about that here at Notre Dame. You know, you might be nervous or might feel like you have pressure to go do something on Saturday. Think about those other people who would love to be in your spot playing in front of 80,000 people. You know, I mean, it's definitely a privilege. And feel fortunate and lucky to be out there playing football, that's for sure.
Did you went to high school, or you grew up in an area not far from Folsom. When I went to UC Santa Barbara when I was in college, I had a couple of guys on my dorm floor that were from Folsom. I went to Folsom once for the first time. You know, really nice place. What was it like growing up in the area that you did in Northern California? When you hit that campus in South Bend for the very first time, what was that like?
Oh, it's great. Growing up in NorCal has been amazing. And, yeah, I went to Oak Ridge High School, and we were rivals with Folsom, so I had a lot of good, you know, matches with them. It was awesome. But I remember my visit here at Notre Dame. I'll never forget. I came in the summer, and it's cliche, you know, a lot of people say that, you know, they feel at home, but I truly did feel really, really, really good about this place. You know, I've never been out to Indiana. You know, I watched the movie Rudy, and that was about it. And then I took my visit out here and met Coach Kelly, and was just a beautiful summer day, and I just felt something, and I felt really good about it, and it's turned out, you know, to be an unbelievable experience.
He's the quarterback at Notre Dame. He's a two-time captain. I mentioned he's on pretty much every single watch list that matters for quarterbacks and player of the year. Notre Dame is 8-0. They're number two, and their next game is against North Carolina. Ian, glad we finally got you on the show. Great to talk to you. Great to meet you, and I hope we can do it again.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
That was fun, Ian. Good job. Well done. Ian Book, you know my disclaimer after Notre Dame interviews. The same disclaimer I have after USC interviews. I'm not sure what it is, but Notre Dame and USC inevitably, and this goes back years and years and years on the show, almost anonymously or exclusively or unanimously, not anonymously, every one of those guys are good interviews. And you can say, yeah, well, they have exposure. Yeah, well, everybody does at this point. But add Ian Book to the list of very polished, very good Notre Dame athletes to talk to. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so the interview portion of the program off to a really good start. I wish I could say the same thing about the Twitter portion of the program, the social media portion of the program. As always, the interviews are out in front of you, but it's not too late. It's a long program. You can catch up. You can show me something. Get it together. Matt Norlander joins me next. You've got the NBA draft coming up, so he will help us break it down. Dennis Dodd, always great conversation. He's coming up in hour number two. Justin Thomas, also always great conversation. He's my podcast guest later on today. First up, the first sports update of this program. Here it is.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You know, we smash that ATP on Wednesdays. Ask the Pros. Go to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros. Submit your question right there. I will answer one later on. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. I said that I would go back-to-back in hour number one, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. We had Notre Dame quarterback Ian Book, and now we're joined by a friend of this program. He covers college basketball for CBSSports.com. He is co-host of CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast. He is part of CBS Sports HQ's coverage of the draft. It gets underway at 7 p.m. He is Matt Norlander. Matt, it is good to have you. What's up, my friend?
Jim, it's wonderful to be back on. It's bizarre because it's the middle of November, and the draft is happening tonight, and college basketball starts exactly 1 week from today. But it's a pleasure to be on, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to have you back, Matt. I was going to make the exact same point. The draft is tonight, and you are part of the coverage for CBS Sports HQ, but I was going to say the same thing. It is so weird to have that draft in November, especially since we have not seen any of the college players on the floor in 8 months now. So overall, how would you describe this draft class?
Well, I'm going to speak on behalf of what I've been told in recent weeks and days and months, and that is this is considered an underwhelming draft class, particularly within the framework of the past 10 to 15 years, looked as maybe arguably a bottom three draft class. At the top of it, it's considered weak. Maybe in the 15 to 25 range, whoever goes there, we might have a few gems. And there will be players that are taken tonight that when we look up 3, 5, 7 years from now, they've established pretty good careers for themselves. But the thing that keeps sticking out to me, and I know we'll get the guys at the top in a minute here, but I keep hearing from a couple of team sources that when they look at the mock drafts that are out there, there's really an expectation that guys that you might think are going to be taken in the late 30s, mid to late 40s, could easily pop into the 20s and then vice versa. So much unpredictability. And a lot of this is because of the free agency period that bumped right up against the draft. The season is supposed to start next month, and these guys have not been able to be seen in a normal environment. So it's making teams have to rely on their best scouts even more than usual. And because of that, frankly, there's a lot of teams that think that they're going to have advantages in this draft because they trust their evaluators a lot more than some of the other teams that might not do their work quite as efficiently. On top of that, throw in what could be a record-setting night in terms of trades and team swapping spots, north of 30 picks changing hands tonight. It really makes for a draft that's impossible to forecast and ultimately one that's going to be a little underwhelming, because when you look in the top 10, although you and I are familiar with these names, people that follow the draft, a lot of these guys, Jim, like we didn't have a tournament. James Wiseman played 3 games last season. Obi Toppin was the National Player of the Year, but even he didn't have the grand stage to play in March Madness. And then guys like Tyrese Haliburton out of Iowa State, they weren't a good team last season. He got injured. So it's just going to be a bizarre experience having the draft. It's been the longest ramp up in the history of this event. And frankly, there's just not a lot of confidence that a lot of these players are going to be impact guys next season. Remember, there's not going to be a normal preseason. In fact, I had one source tell me that there's skepticism even like 15 of these guys are going to play significant minutes next season because there's not going to be a summer league. There's not going to be this 4 to 6 week period where they get acclimated with the teams and are working out as normal in the facility. So just keep that in mind when we talk tonight and see these guys go and see them picked. This really could be a less impactful draft 1 to 60 than we've ever seen because of the accelerated timeline to the 2021-22 season.
It is a really interesting response, and there's a lot to look to tonight based on that response in and of itself. Matt Norlander, my guest. So, Matt, go to the top of the draft, and you mentioned a number of guys that I did want to ask you about, but unlike last year when it was obvious for months that Zion Williamson was going to be the guy, there is a level of mystery surrounding this draft for a lot of reasons that you mentioned. There's been a lot of talk also about LaMelo Ball as the potential number one. What do you make of his game?
I think I might be the biggest seller on LaMelo Ball out there. He's got a really high ceiling. He's never proven to be a reliable shooter, consistent from deep. Obviously, 6'7", really good distributor, but have heard concerns about just, is this the kind of player that if you take number one, no matter what draft it is, if you're taking a player number one, if you were to go number one or number two, that is either a player that you expect to be a franchise-level guy or something close to it. And there's simply too much skepticism out there to say that that's going to be the case. I don't happen to think that when we look up 5, 6 years from now and see whomever gets picked first, second, third, fourth, fifth, I don't think LaMelo Ball is going to be one of the 5 best players to come out of this draft. Yes, he's tantalizing because of his size, but I actually think that his body has some real concerns. He needs to grow into it a bit more. I think he's got a pretty weak base. Defensively, it's just not there at all. And that's kind of a criticism that sometimes is levied too consistently and harshly on guys coming out of college. And obviously LaMelo didn't go to college, but when they enter the NBA draft, it's like, well, how good is he defensively? Sometimes I think that could be overstated. I think it is overstated with a guy like Obi Toppin, but LaMelo Ball, it's not even like defense is optional. It's like defense isn't even on the table. And that is something that concerns some teams. He is considered in that pool with James Wiseman and Anthony Edwards as the top tier. But for me personally, I'm just not in on him as a top five prospect in this draft. And I'm not alone. There are some teams out there that aren't even in that top three, top four conversation, but that I've been told wouldn't even consider taking him in that spot. If you take him and he hits, he's going to hit and he could be really, really good. But fair or not, he is getting compared to his older brother. And Lonzo was taken second. He's been a good player, but he hasn't lived up to that pick. And I can say easily there are way more questions about LaMelo heading into this draft than there were about Lonzo when he came out of UCLA. So I am a seller, relatively speaking, but he is almost certainly going to go in the top three tonight.
Matt Norlander is my guest. All right, Matt, you mentioned Anthony Edwards a couple of times. What about him? He had that ridiculous second half against Michigan State out in Maui nearly a year ago. What do you remember about that performance, and what do you make of his game overall?
Well, the Maui, man, that's a year ago, Jim. That's just blowing my mind.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that was actually 6 years ago. You might want to fact check that. But anyway, that was a great performance, but Georgia was a non-factor. I've been told Minnesota is leaning Edwards if it does keep that top pick tonight and it wants to get rid of it. I don't know if it's going to be able to, but if Minnesota holds on to it, it seems like Edwards is going to be the play. I say that while also adding yet again, this is the hardest draft to forecast on the whole. Edwards is not a great playmaker. I think that if he hits big, he's going to be a guy that can give you 24 a night and is going to be a reliable top two scorer on your team. Really good athlete. I think a wonderful teammate and a smart player. But from a playmaking perspective, like, I don't even see him as a combo guard potential. He's just straight up lead guard, shoot first, and wants to get his. I think there are other players, like, for all my criticisms of LaMelo, like, he's obviously going to be a superior playmaker to Anthony Edwards. Guys like Killian Hayes, Tyrese Halliburton, much better playmakers than Anthony Edwards. So, again, relative to the guys that are around him, I'm just not as in. To me, Anthony Edwards is not the best prospect in this draft pool. And if you get him, you got to hope that he can be an immediate kind of scorer and give you dividends there. But it's no secret that Minnesota is not not in an enviable position having the first pick in this particular draft when there's just no one out there that is seen as a surefire thing.
Matt Norlander is joining us, getting ready for the NBA draft. All right, now what about James Wiseman? He was in Memphis briefly. Then in December, he announced that he was going to leave to enter the draft after dealing with an eligibility case. At the time he announced that he was leaving, you wrote that you did not blame him for making that choice because, in part, quote, the adults failed him at just about every turn, end quote. Lay that out for me. What do you mean by that?
Well, this goes back to before Wiseman even got to Memphis and when Penny Hardaway basically paid for expenses for his family to move from one side of Tennessee to the other. That wound up being the reason why Wiseman, he only played three games for the Tigers. And, you know, Penny was not the coach at Memphis at the time when that happened. But, you know, the possibility of that happening was not this unthinkable thing, I think, for Hardaway. And he was doing a good deed, and he's done so much for that program, for that community. But between Wiseman's, you know, family, Penny himself, and then the fiasco that was a year ago when Wiseman was supposed to make his debut for Memphis and was in trying to get an injunction in a Memphis courtroom, literally 80 minutes before tip-off of a game. I mean, it's the most Memphis basketball thing ever. It just became this huge melodramatic thing. He ultimately bailed out. He did get some criticism for that. Like, there were people in that program that straight up believed and still do believe that Wiseman quit on the team. And, there, you know, he had his reasons, but they might not have been good enough for that program. But regardless, that's what happened. And since then, you know, he's gone almost a year without playing competitive basketball. Weirdly, I wonder if that's going to not hurt him as much as it otherwise would have because, again, so many people have not played competitive basketball since March. Anyone that was in college, they haven't been on the floor there. I do think he's got the highest ceiling of anyone in the draft, you know, but he is a center. So is he going to be able to prove and will the teams ask him to step out and be able to shoot 18, 20, 22 feet from the rim? I don't know. Certainly plenty of interesting buzz about, you know, if Golden State were to hold on to the second pick and if he were to go there, how they'd make it work. He's got a lot of potential. I like him more than LaMelo. I like him more than Anthony Edwards. There are some limitations there. And again, just, you know, the lack of film, if you will, isn't interesting. And then one other thing that isn't obviously evident, and I wonder if it will or won't affect where he goes, you know, Wiseman had a weird thing about him when, before he got to Memphis, in that the grassroots team he played for, what people call the AAU team, he was often good, but he would have weird stretches where he would just not produce. He would disappear in games, and it was almost, you know, a classic case of a guy who's so ridiculously talented, you should be dominating basically every night out. That was not the case with Wiseman. So if he does not go one or two, I wonder if those kind of factors play in. But personally, I like him more. The only guy I like above Wiseman, I would take Obi Toppin number one in this draft. I think he is the safest pick. He doesn't have the highest ceiling. I think he has the highest floor. Took Dayton to levels it had never been before. Was the best player in college basketball that season. Tremendously athletic. I think the knocks on his defense are just way overstated. This dude shot 69% from two-point range last season. That's obviously nice. He was 39% from three-point range. And again, he did it not just for Dayton in ways that had never been done before, but he was really, really good against really, really good teams. We mentioned Anthony Edwards in Maui last season. Toppin was absurd against Kansas, which was the best team in college basketball. To me, he's not going to go number one tonight, but I'm telling you, let's loop back in 5 years. I think Obi Toppin is going to be the best pro to come out of this draft.
It truly is too bad that we didn't see him in Dayton in the NCAA tournament, along with many others. He covers college basketball for CBSSports.com, co-host of the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, and a part of CBS Sports HQ's coverage of the draft starting at 7 p.m. this evening. Matt Norlander, our guest. Matt, thank you very much. Have a great night, and I know you and I will chop it up again soon.
You got it, Jim. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
You too, Matt. Thank you very much. NBA draft this evening. All right, then. I said we'd go back-to-back. We did. So what that means is the top of hour number two is open. We do not have another conversation until 10:40. But before we do that, we will have a beef segment. All right? So kind of reset yourself. Recalibrate. Think about your beef. Doesn't matter what it is. Sports, non-sports, life, whatever. Get your beef and get it to me. 1-800-636-8686. Or just tweet me that beef. The beef segment. Once a week. 10:20. That's coming up. Open segment next.